Hello and welcome to this, our final episode of The Resilient Pharmacist. Over the past 9 episodes, we've heard about different aspects of resilience within pharmacy. We've been privileged to hear of the lived experience of colleagues within the profession, and I'm sure you'll agree it has been humbling to hear their stories told so frankly and honestly. Together, they have created a powerful collection of stories from the front line. Today, I'm joined by Professor Abby Lane, consultant psychiatrist who has a particular interest and expertise in stress management. She leads practice at the Gulliver Clinic and also contributes to the UCD medical curriculum. And she's going to help us identify some of the common themes that emerged from this collection of unique stories. And she'll be helping us to make sense of how we can take some personal learnings from the series. My name is Dr. Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. You're very welcome, Abby. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Katrina. I'm privileged, and thank you for allowing me to be part of this wonderful initiative.
We're delighted to have you. Would you like to just introduce yourself a little bit and your interest in this area, and then we can maybe look back on the 9 stories or the 9 episodes we've heard?
Well, I qualified in medicine from the College of Surgeons, so I'm originally from Roscommon, so left there quite a while ago. Qualified in medicine and then did my training in psychiatry. And I suppose at the time I was fortunate to work for the St. John of God Services and a group of people very forward looking at the time, Dr. Conal Arkin, Brother Lawrence Kearns and an occupational therapist, Orla O'Neill, were putting together a plan to develop a service for stress as they felt that this was an up and coming area. At that time, stress was practically unheard of. It was something you were supposed to manage and deal with. But they wanted to look at developing a service, and I had the opportunity to come on board and to lead that service and develop it over a number of years. So I worked in St. John of God's until 2013 and then left to set up my own service, focusing mainly on stress and stress-related illness. I suppose I've always been interested in that interface between physical and mental health. And I suppose I've had the privilege over the years to work with lovely people and help them build their resilience and help them or support them to make the choices they make in their lives. And as I say, I'm privileged to be here today to be part of this fabulous initiative.
Thank you for that. And we're privileged to have you too. So you've listened to all of the podcasts and all the series at this stage. Collectively, you know, as a piece of work, what are your thoughts or your comments on it?
I have listened to all of them. I think it's an absolutely fabulous piece of work. And I think, as you said, it brings to life through the lived experience the, I suppose, reasons why people develop stress, the impact it can have, and the different strategies that one can use to manage it. But I suppose the overall, one message out that I took from it is that self-awareness, that knowing yourself, that piece of knowing when you are experiencing pressure or stress, and then knowing what works for you in terms of managing it, having your own strategy, if you like. And I think that comes very much through all the different episodes, you know, what people have found works for them, how they've seen their health maybe change or deteriorate. And then this was the courage and confidence that the courage that they've had to make the changes. And then the confidence that they have felt as they've seen their lives change or their positive outcomes from what they've done. Mm-hmm. So that would be the main factor that I would have seen. But I think there's also a huge energy from this project that I could feel coming through, an energy and a momentum to look at this, maybe not so much as a one-dimensional on the paper facts and figures, but actually looking from the human impact and moving it forward then into the whole profession and how the profession can connect and build and support one another to deal with the pressures of the occupation.
Well, it's perceptive of you, because really it was a project and it is the brainchild of the profession. It's what they themselves identified. So really the Institute has just been a vehicle for that. But, you know, you can see their passion for helping each other come through. I think it was very humbling to be on the other side of the table of these people as they told their stories. Mm-hmm. One thing about knowing yourself that I just want to tease out a little bit. We heard different ways of this coming through in some of the stories. So some of the guests had a very strong sense of themselves from the very beginning. You could hear that they, you know, from a young age, they knew themselves. And there were others who felt that they didn't really know themselves. They only got to know more about themselves much later in life. For somebody, it sounds so simple, know yourself. But how do you go about that? And or maybe that's a silly question, I don't know. But any tips?
Well, it's not a silly question at all. I think, as you say, it did come through that some people were very aware from an early age, very aware of, I suppose, pressure and stress, and very much aware of the impact it had on them. And they had identified, if you like, ways of coping mm-hmm. from an early age. You know, what works for you? What makes you feel good? What doesn't work as well? When do you start to feel pressure? You know, that sort of gut feeling that you can get when you know that things are right or wrong. And I suppose this checking in with yourself to when you can identify when things are getting too pressured. You know, what happens? You know, does your sleep go off? Do you start behaving out of character? Do things start to feel too much pressure? Do you start to feel, oh, I don't have enough days hours in the day or days in the week? Are you letting things slip? Those type of things would be pointers of knowing what way do you react? Because everybody is different. I mean, everybody has a stress response. But it's knowing how it comes out in you and then knowing what helps you to manage. So it's, I mean, there's never been more information in terms of stress management and health and well-being, but it's actually being able to pick from the whole menu as to what will work for you. And I think that was very clearly outlined in the different contributions. You know, some people said, look, It's a break. It's a breakaway. Some people said, well, look, you know, they were doing all sorts of activity and they were advised, actually, it's quiet time. It's stopping and pausing and giving yourself a time to, I suppose, get your bearings with things. So it's looking at that. And it's, I suppose, also managing the thinking patterns that we have, the shoulds and the musts, which I think came out very much in I suppose I think you had mentioned it very well. You know, is it the magician chooses the wand or the wand chooses the magician? And I think, you know, in pharmacy, one has to be meticulous and perfectionistic. And with that comes that 100% of the time type of thinking, I should, I must, I have to. And I think it's being aware of that and trying to challenge that and manage it. In different ways that we can talk about. But, you know, there are many ways you can manage that so that you're not as critical or hard on yourself.
And I'm interested in that idea. I never thought about it like this, actually. But, you know, some people maybe don't know themselves because it's their normal and they don't realise it's maybe different to other people. But what I've heard you saying there is sometimes knowing what's not yourself, knowing when you're not yourself is actually as important, knowing when something changes for you, just noticing those deviations from normal, whatever normal is for you, can be a clue that things aren't quite where they should be and you need to be mindful.
Yeah, I mean, that's very much a piece of change. You know, what were you like? Mm. What were you like a year ago? When did you last feel well in yourself?
Okay.
When did you last have a sense of joy or energy? Because that's sometimes what goes when one is under pressure. And I suppose it came across, I think, in many of the contributions, that piece of stopping and pausing and reflecting.
You probably heard me at some stages getting frustrated, going, oh, I don't like stopping.
That's exactly it. And that's the piece. You see, we can get very busy. We can get busy with the adrenaline buzz. But it's actually being able to stop, and it will feel very uncomfortable, and just saying, well, look, what is going right here and what is not going right here? And I think that came through in many of the contributions, that people had pushed on for a very long time.
Mm.
They had kept going. And I think a number had mentioned this badge of honour.
Yeah.
We have to keep going, or if we don't, we're a failure.
And that's not necessarily a pharmacy thing. Sure, it's not.
That's not necessary. Mm. I mean, many, many driven people and successful people have that piece that we need to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes self-fulfilling because we do keep going.
Mm.
And I think that was mentioned a number of times, that people were kept going, kept busy, but realized that really, you know, they were missing out on many things in their lives, things that they felt were important to them. And they stopped, reflected, and I think took their time, because, you know, there isn't a magic wand to this, and there isn't a quick fix. But it came across that people did think about it, took their time, looked at what was important to them, their values, as we would call it, and then started to do what we call align what we're doing to those values, and could see then the benefit over time. But I suppose that takes that step to step back, to reflect, to actually, go deep down on what makes you tick as a person, what you want in your life, and then the courage to make the changes.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but it that courage word is actually, it can be a challenge. And so I like that idea that it isn't a magic wand. You're not just going to be able to do a piece of meditation or a particular strategy and expect immediate change. You've talked about that before as almost being project management of yourself, isn't it? You have a lovely name for that.
I call it Project Manage Me, because I think we get busy in our careers. We're very good at projects. We're very good at delivering. And I think none more so than pharmacy, who, you know, have worked under enormously stressful conditions over the past 2 years. And I think sometimes we don't maybe give our own selves and our personal life maybe the same focus. So I call it Project Manage Me because it takes maybe the personal out of it. So you actually start to look, well, look, what makes me tick? What do I want here? Where am I headed? What things work well for me? What gives me enjoyment? What makes my heart sing? What gives me the absolute opposite feeling and makes my heart sink? And then to look at, I suppose, what I would call uplifts, the things that I can do to make me feel good.
And they'll be different for everybody, won't they?
Well, that's the thing. They will be different for everybody. And I think you mentioned there, you know, that somebody might do meditation or might do exercise and then think after maybe a week, why am I not feeling better? But it's not really like that. And I think it's small adjustments and sustaining them. And by that, you know, meaning taking very brief periods of time to sit and maybe just watch out the window. I think somebody mentioned their green plant, you know, to sit with their green plant, to maybe have something in your office space that reminds you of a happy time, and that you gradually build up a repertoire of activities that will help sustain you in your busy day. And that, I suppose, it's, I'm often faced with, I suppose, two things people would say to me. One is, it can't be that simple. And the next is, I haven't got the time. And that to me is a big piece, that we, you know, we do have the time if we think about it really. And I calculated earlier, there's, I think, 1,400 minutes in the day, in our day. And you know, show me the person who won't be able to make 10 or 15 minutes out of that for themselves. And that's why I would say, start small, start with 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and just see how you get on with it. But you will, and I suppose this is the other piece, there are endless resources out there in terms of well-being. But at the end of the day, you have to pick the one that works for you, and you have to stay with it. Uh-huh. And you have to make that decision that you are going to make this change.
And I think there's a difficulty in it as well. And I will come around to the point that this isn't just about pharmacists, that may be just part of the human condition. But when it comes to even that project manage me, I can imagine myself getting lots of actions in on a project plan and deciding I'm going to go through them and go with the normal gusto. And it kind of jars with me a little bit about the do nothing. But actually what you're saying is that's as important, if not more so, and maybe more challenging, but is important to spend the time doing it.
Yeah, it's that reflective piece. Mm. It's that restorative rest, recuperation. And I suppose it's important at the moment because we are very used, to stress, acute mm-hmm. stress that will make us feel pressured, over a number of days. But we haven't actually been in a situation, or most of us haven't been in a situation like now with the pandemic mm-hmm. and sustained mm-hmm. pressure. And really that activates, I suppose, the stress activates our adrenaline that gives mm-hmm. us the buzz and keeps us going. But the current situation activates our cortisol, which is actually a very depleting we lose energy, mm-hmm. we lose motivation, we lose interest. So it's convincing oneself that actually stopping, pausing, reflecting, and I think your contributors very much said that. Mm-hmm. It was when they stopped, it felt uncomfortable. But from that then came maybe their plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose you're quite right. I mean, a project, if one allows it, we'll have all sorts of things and deadlines and but it's not like that. It's actually sitting and just giving oneself time to recoup and replenish. And that's where sleep comes in, because obviously that's a huge piece of rest.
So this all has a very physical component, a very objective aim, apart from the subjective thinking, actually just to calm down aspects of the body's response to stress.
Well, I suppose stress is, and stress is a part of all of us. It's mm-hmm. that threat response that we have. It's protective, and I think I was reflecting on the different podcasts you had, and I think you started one with the trauma of being threatened mm-hmm. in the workplace, and I think, as we went on then through the podcast, you could see that other people were feeling threatened or stressed by either things in their home life or either things in their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a great example of how we react as human beings to perceived threat, be mm-hmm. it the actual threat of being attacked or be it the threat of not being good enough or not doing enough or not getting through the work or having too much to do.
Wow, so similar impacts if they're not managed.
Similar impacts, because they all activate our stress response, and that's adrenaline driven.
That's so interesting, yeah.
So that gives us all of those very uncomfortable feelings. The heart racing, mm-hmm. breathing, tummy upset, sweating, and then into the psychological irritabilities, poor energy, lack of interest, lack of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
But the common pathway, the way we feel it in the body is the same. Now, it's not the same for everybody, because everybody tends to have their own, we'll say, stress sign. So mm-hmm. you'll often know with somebody when their, I suppose, chest and neck starts to get flushed.
Okay, yeah.
When they have a tremor in their hand or mm-hmm. when they start breathing differently. So you'll know yourself what your sign of stress is.
And it's to pay attention and respond.
And it's to pay attention and respond, because it's the same process happening within us. So that's okay. why you can have many different reasons for the stress, but the impact in the body is the same. And the illnesses that people develop are the same, the stress-related illnesses, irrespective of what the cause might be.
So am I right in thinking, for all that we've called this the resilient pharmacist, because it's been focused on pharmacy, are we really just talking about something that's a human condition and no different really in anybody else?
Well, that's a very good question. I suppose I would coming from the medical field, see a lot of doctors who would have similar, and a lot of professionals who would have similar feelings and impacts. I think we're probably looking at a constellation of, I suppose, personality and environment,
okay,
and coping or resilience that intermixes to give the signs or the symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I think we are probably talking about an underlying human physical reaction.
Okay.
And it's very interesting if you look at the strategies, the well-being strategies, exercise, mindfulness, sleep, what they all do is they dampen down our stress response.
Okay.
So that's, I suppose, the common pathway that, and that's the reason why there is such an emphasis on lifestyle factors.
Okay. And so then if the stress and the response and the means of addressing it are pretty much human conditions, is there anything that has struck you in listening to the podcast that would be specific stressors related to pharmacy and the pharmacy profession?
Yes, I was looking at that because I suppose I was maybe not surprised, but it came across as quite striking, the number of different roles that a pharmacist was required to fulfill.
Really?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, obviously, I've worked with pharmacists through various times. But, you know, you get, I suppose there's the piece of the dispensing of the medication. Mm-hmm. But also what I heard in the podcast was the interface with the patient, the regulatory requirements, the team building, team management, the business management. And the very many other aspects of administration, you know, from having the shelves stocked to ensuring supply. So it just struck me that there's a huge diversity of activity that's expected from the pharmacist. And I think it was interesting that some of the contributors would have mentioned that in terms of the team. So they knew their own strengths and what they liked, ensured they got back to doing that and maybe delegated or had another team member who would fulfill a different aspect of the role. Yeah. But it did strike me that there's a lot expected, a lot of diverse activities. And I just think there's a lot in terms of the mental flexibility to shift from, we'll say, fulfilling a regulatory requirement to interacting with the distressed individual who, you know, may have just had bad news or be stressed themselves. So there's quite a, I suppose, a mind shift and a performance shift required for a pharmacist in their day to day. And I think there's also, it would seem, a lot of persistent pressure, you know, checking, being aware of risk, being aware of safety. And that's a lot to carry.
Yeah, it's a really interesting observation. And that's why it's wonderful to talk to people from outside the profession, because you're right. You know, if I think about it, we had everything from, you know, running the shop and the pharmacy, sorting out sandbags to make sure it didn't get flooded, thinking about the clinical role, thinking about the team role, thinking about the business, the family business potentially, and all that goes on and the pressure with that and expansion. We probably take it for granted. It never occurred to me that that's probably a lot of different gears that you have to be going to in a day.
That's a lot of different gears. Okay. And it's a lot of activity. And I think, again, it came across that, you know, it's almost like the pharmacist has become used to, or as they develop, as the pharmacist becomes used to taking on these roles. And it is that piece that unless you stop and reflect, you often don't realise how much activity you're doing or taking on, and how much diversity in it. Now, diversity in activity is good, but if you're trying to shift very quickly from, you know, the sandbags to the dispensing, it's a lot. It's a big ask, and it's a big ask when we get stressed, because when we get stressed, we lose a bit of mental flexibility. We become fixed and narrowed in our thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a recipe for trouble, if you like, if you're trying to do all of that and manage uncertainty or manage the unexpected that comes your way.
And in the mix is this expectation that pharmacists have to be 100% accurate 100% of the time when it comes clinically. So the change and shift to other arenas, I think sometimes we forget that we can drop the perfectionism.
Yeah, it is. It is that. I mean, perfectionism is necessary, obviously, because the risk is there. Mm-hmm. But it is something that I think can feed into a thinking across the other aspects that may not warrant that level of scrutiny or may not warrant that level of meticulous attention. And that clicks in then with the I should and I must and I have to. Mm-hmm. So that's that hard on myself. And that's, I suppose, the piece of the self-compassion that we've heard from some of the contributors.
Yeah,
that self, you know, allowing oneself to be kind and to be oneself.
And just and be good enough.
Be good enough. Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And that's that component of trying to be less self-critical, because we can be very unpleasant sometimes to ourselves. I'm not saying pharmacists, but
people,
all of us
yeah.
can be very unpleasant to ourselves. I sort of use the example, you know, would you say to your friend what you're saying to yourself? And it's a good, I suppose, measure of whether you are slipping into or have a self-critical underpinning thinking pattern.
I think we probably have adopted it unconsciously. Like, it's not to say that other professions don't strive for perfection. But I think if you're making a diagnosis or if you're making a judgment call, you know and accept that there's always going to be inherent risk, and you take your professional responsibility seriously and using what you can available to you at the time. I heard in some of the contributors a fear when they went home, the second guessing of thinking, God, yeah. did I make a mistake? And that making a mistake isn't really acceptable when it comes to this specific type of job. That does bring a certain pressure. And if we can't leave down that mantle when we move away from the task and of dispensing, yeah, it would create pressure, wouldn't it?
It does. It does create enormous pressure.
And add to that, a lot of them work in isolation.
Yes, yes. That's that other piece of not having somebody to bounce questions, queries off. Mm. And I think that's why your last session on mentorship was so, I suppose, interesting and so great to see the impact that sharing or that joint decision making or sharing of concerns, that collegiality, that sort of connection that supports people. Because it is hard when you are in isolation, and I think that came across very much in some of the sessions where people felt they had to keep going and they didn't know where to go for support or help.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard. You know, that's very hard if you're in that position. So I think that sharing, that mentoring, that bouncing off one another, that, you know, that looking at what's acceptable for your peer or for yourself is really important.
And would you be able to comment more on that mentoring piece? Because we, you know, obviously it had four different contributors, and you could hear from people who were less experienced that they felt inadequate because they didn't have enough experience. And then we could hear from very experienced people that they felt inadequate because they felt they maybe didn't have the right type of experience. You know, I found that really intriguing. And what I also was interested in is that even though it was the middle of a pandemic and it was busy, these pharmacists who worked as mentors actually found it really replenishing and fulfilling, which was counterintuitive, isn't it? So any insights or comments from that particular episode?
I think it was fascinating to hear the uncertainties of, as you say, the younger pharmacists and then the older pharmacists. But I think what came through for me through all the sessions was the importance of mentoring. I think it was one of your contributors, Miss, referred
to. Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, they had the name, Hanratty or something. Yes, I can't quite remember.
But, you know, it is so true that we learn so much. And I think it's having that openness to to come and contribute, and, you know, the courage to do it, because you could hear that in the voices of some of the mentors, that they were concerned that they weren't going to be good enough. Mm. But I think then they got the confidence as it went on.
Through the doing.
Through the doing. But there is that piece of and I think it was mentioned in some other sessions, of giving back, of either volunteering or that altruistic giving back to the profession. And that can be very empowering and be very affirming for a person, particularly if they are working in isolation. So it's that knowing and that positive feedback that one gets. But
And it comes back to that idea of contributing to your profession. We wouldn't have had this podcast had we not had those mental health ambassadors come up with the idea and develop the concept. It wasn't a centrally engineered thing. It was very authentic and from grassroots. Yeah. Same with the mentoring. You know, a pharmacist literally called us up and said they really felt that they wanted to put their shoulder behind the wheel and help us with this. So I suppose there's something to be learned from that, isn't there? And we've had great bravery and kind of commitment to the profession demonstrated throughout the podcast, really.
Yeah. But I think that connection is huge. And if you look at any psychological well-being resilience, it is our connection to family, friends, peers, that support, that sort of non-judgmental place where one can go with one's queries or concerns. That's the place that keeps people well. So it's, I think, a really, really valuable initiative. And as you say, anything that comes, and like this, the lived experience, has a different resonance because it is coming from the, you know, the profession, and they're the experts in what works and hasn't worked or will work or won't work for themselves.
And I think, it's been interesting having different people comment, be it on Twitter or contact us by email, that different things resonated with different people. And that was the beauty of having so many different stories, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it is, you know, all of those stories were very different, all of them hugely valuable, you know, really life experience. And certainly they were examples of what I would very much see in practice, you know, that diversity, the common pathway, and the often then the common result, but the many, many different variations in the story. And of course, there's the piece, we are all individuals, so we bring ourselves to our profession as well. But, you know, the commonality then, I think, in what worked for people, what they noticed, what they put in place, and what they then saw in terms of improving both maybe their professional life, but also their quality of life and their well-being outside in the home, and the knock-on impact on other people around them.
And you know what struck me as well from one of the contributors? They said something which I see a lot in myself and in colleagues. We love learning as pharmacists. We love learning new things. And it is many of our tendencies to do a new course, do a new part of study. And one of them saying, actually, the stopping and reflecting and being involved in something that wasn't academic, but actually pushing them outside the comfort zone of something more reflective is interesting and can be equally valuable as a piece of learning, isn't it?
It is. And I think that came across. I think one of your contributors talked about the CPD and their concern about going into the whole CPD process and then realising that actually this was really positive in terms of giving the opportunity to reflect.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I have the privilege in the Institute of Pharmacy, you know, it is a reflective model of continuing professional development, which is quite rare, but does allow and expect that level of reflection and self-evaluation in order to grow both clinically as well as personally. So that is certainly a nice aspect of it.
And I think it was interesting, you know, I think it's that shift that's required maybe from the purely academic to the more reflective. And I think, again, it's like when we're busy, we struggle to stop. But when we're in one way of thinking, either academic or qualification, that we can feel strange to start to reflect and look at maybe the more emotional or the what I call the less measurable, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah.
Outcomes.
And particularly when there's about 10 different roles there that we need to do. So we're already swapping from the leader to the clinician, to the operator, to the manager, to the business person. And then we add in a reflector as well. Yeah. So it really has to underpin everything, doesn't it?
And
be interwoven.
But I think that's if you stop and start to think, you will see for yourself. You know, the themes, and it will often boil down to a number of factors. You know, what is the priority for you at this point in time?
And so building on that, Abby, and as we come kind of towards the end of this last episode, what's your advice to people? So somebody's sitting there and they've listened to the stories, they're listening to you. What do they do next?
Okay. I think probably the most important thing would be, having heard all of these, as I think they are really powerful, they had me thinking. I mean, I sat and, you know, certainly after a number of the episodes, and thought, you know, what am I doing here now with my life at this point
really?
In time? Yes, I did. I think that's what I would say to people. Sit down, you know, take 5-10 minutes. Start of the day generally is best, and just sit and just think, you know, where am I headed here? What's my priority? What am I happy with? What am I not happy with? How might I start to look at adjusting, if I need to adjust? Now, not everyone will, and many people would be very happy doing what they're doing. But I think it's to just sit with all of this information, because it is very powerful, and just say, well, you know, what's the meaning of all of this for me? And then to build in on a regular basis in a further evaluation or review, because life changes. And I think that was brought very clearly out in the podcast, you know, that things happen at different points in our lives, and we need to be agile to start to look at that, and not to be afraid of that. To sort of say, well, look, what would I like to adjust here now if I had the opportunity? And then to maybe look at how one might make that happen, but not to feel under pressure. You know, one doesn't have to. I suppose the risk would be that one would turn this into
another to-do list.
To-do list. And I'm not in favour of to-do lists.
Okay. Well, we love them as pharmacists. Okay, so the first to-do is to take away the to-do list.
Or if you're going to have a to-do list, to not have too much on it. Have a very short to-do list. But it is just saying, well, look, you know, if you're not happy with something, when were you last happy? What was it about that time that you felt made you happy or made you feel happy? And, you know, I think this is a wonderful series, and I think there's probably huge potential to develop and evolve from it.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one final question, because it cropped up every so often, the role of counselling and the times at which it's appropriate to avail of counselling services. Have you any thoughts on that?
I suppose it links into support, and I suppose it's that sharing and connection and sharing your problems. So counselling is certainly a valuable service to have. Now, if you have friends, and if you have family, and if you have peers or a team that can provide that type of support, it's great. But counselling provides, I suppose, a safe space for somebody to go to talk about their situation in a sort of in a place where there's non-judgmental approach to the situation. So I think, you know, through the podcast, a number of people went to counselling when they were in trouble. But I thought it was very interesting. One of your contributors went and thought, well, I really don't have too much to talk about, but actually it showed up a different aspect of things. So I think it's a place to go, maybe to share your deepmost thoughts in a safe way, and to get support from a professional who will help you to, I suppose, move out from the stressful situation, to build your resilience, your coping style, to look at patterns, to break out of cycles of maybe patterns of behaviour. So it's a very useful resource. And I think a lot of organisations, and certainly I know the Practitioner Health Matters programme would be very much, which is available to pharmacists, would be very much along that counselling and support. But I think the piece about counselling sometimes is that people maybe are, I suppose, fearful of it, or maybe don't know whether they need to go or not.
Yeah, that came across, didn't it, sometimes?
It did, yeah. And I think if you are, I mean, there is a stigma attached to it, to a lot of mental health, maybe not so much now as before. But I suppose I would encourage people, if they are contemplating counselling or think, well, maybe I do need to go, I would go and maybe try it out.
Okay.
And maybe have a number of sessions with somebody before you'd make up your mind. And sometimes, you know, even going and being open to it, it can take you down roads that maybe you hadn't considered yourself. Because, you know, it's sometimes in the saying and the talking, solutions come to mind anyway. But it can also, I think, help to share and to have another set of eyes on things.
Well, it's almost like this session in itself. I've sat through the stories and listened to them and had seen different ideas and patterns, but even some of the things we've talked about in this particular podcast, by virtue of you coming with an outsider view, it's raised my awareness of, yeah, the number of roles we actually try to fulfill and the levels of stress we can put ourselves under. So yeah, just like that, an external perspective is always useful.
It's always useful.
Wow. So Annie, parting words, Abby. I'm going to leave the end of this podcast to you.
Okay.
To wrap up, what do you think needs to be considered? You've given us some tips. You've encouraged people to stop and to really just think and reflect. Any final parting words of wisdom?
Okay.
No pressure.
Put me on the spot, no pressure. I think this is a fabulous initiative, and what, you know, when you sit back and look at it, I certainly hearing it, I could feel the energy, I could feel the momentum, and I could feel the confidence within the group, both the mentoring group and in the individuals along the way, in terms of the improvements and the things you were doing. So I would say continue doing what you're doing, just do more.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today and for helping us just to take a moment and think about the stories and consider what next. So thank you, Professor Lane, for being with us today. And sadly, this is the last of the series. I really do hope that listeners have found it useful. And there's a number of people that need to be thanked. The team in the Irish Institute of Pharmacy, particularly Alicia and Sonia and Audrey, who have managed all of this. It has taken a lot of work. It doesn't look like it on the surface of it, but the amount of work that goes into a production like this is phenomenal. And the team in Head Stuff have been really wonderful in helping us to get our heads around all the technical aspects. In particular, I think it goes without saying, in addition to Professor Lane, who's with us today, all of the contributors throughout this series, we really do owe a huge debt of gratitude to them. So I'd like to specifically say thank you to Elva, Brenda, Seamus, Jean, Rebecca, Deck, Julian, Lisa, Louisa, Margaret, Mayasola and Kian. Thank you from all of us for sharing your stories. And thank you, listeners, for joining us and hearing what our guests had to say. And for those of you who've interacted with us or continue to interact with us, feel free to get in touch with us in the Irish Institute of Pharmacy at www.iiop.ie if you want to, I suppose, get in touch about any aspect of what you've heard. But thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure to host the series, and I hope you've enjoyed it.